Broadcast out of New York City, you're listening to Prescriptions for Health on Internet Radio on Monday, June 25th, 2012. I'm Dr. Len Saputo.
And I'm registered nurse Vicki Saputo. Thank you for joining us on our weekly Prescriptions for Health show on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com every Monday live from 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern Time and 10 to 11 Pacific Standard Time. And remember that our shows are archived on DrSaputo.com and PRN.FM.
Okay, and remember that you're going to hear Vicki's 2020 health tips at 20 after the hour and 22 the hour. And we've got another great show for you today that's going to include how vitamin D and calcium together reduce mortality in the elderly.
And fruits that protect us against obesity-related diabetes and cardiovascular disease.
And more news about the intestinal microflora. My goodness, they do so many things that we're beginning to discover. It's just amazing.
And we have much, much more.
And if you want to join us in our conversation today or you have questions about the topics we're discussing, give us a call on 888-874-4888.
Usually we think of vitamin D with calcium for strong bones, and now a new study shows that together they can lower the death rate in women that are over 70. So tell us why this doesn't mean that we can just do this, though, without supervision of our healthcare practitioner.
Well, see, a lot of the time what happens is we get the idea that a little bit of something is good, and so a lot of it is better. And a lot of people are really into using large doses of vitamins and minerals and herbs and all kinds of supplements. And I have to tell you, I'm not into that. I remember one person who was a coach for one of the major football teams in California came to me as a patient, and he pulled out his suitcase, okay, big suitcase of supplements. And I had a rather large desk at that time, and there was no room on the desk. These little bottles were everywhere, and he was so proud of himself because he was consuming all these vitamins. And I looked at him, and I actually took a picture of it because I couldn't believe what I was seeing. He was probably taking 100 different things a day. And I said, no, you know, it's not the way you get your nutrition.
But, you know, sometimes there's a time and a place for taking supplements.
Exactly.
And they're probably a better choice most of the time, not all the time, but most of the time than drugs.
Exactly.
And people don't generally die from taking supplements, whereas we have 400,000 people a year that are dying from taking from the side effects of their medications.
That's a great point to make, and that's why I practice medicine that way. There's a field of medicine called orthomolecular medicine, which means using natural things that are found in nature in differing amounts to try and regulate cell biochemistry to restore it to a more normal state. So you're making a great point here. So my point is that our best way to get nutrition is from food, right? Just the way it comes out in nature. So if it looks like a watermelon or a zucchini, eat it. If it comes in a package and it's got an ingredients list and it comes in and it's cellophane, don't, because what you've got there is a food product, not food.
The other thing is that not all supplements are created equal either. Some of them just come right out whole the way they came, went in. They don't dissolve.
Well, that's right. If that capsule comes out the way it went in, you know you probably didn't get much out of it. And there are a lot of them that are like that. Maybe half of the multivitamins a couple of years ago when I checked into this were actually ones that didn't do you much good. So when we're talking about calcium and vitamin D and adding it, then I think we need to take a careful look to how much we're going to use.
The other thing is, too, many times it's tempting to make assumptions about things. You know, like we'll get a study that'll say low vitamin D can increase the risk of cancer and diabetes and hypertension and heart attacks and fractures. But can we assume that high vitamin D can correct these things on its own? And that's part of what this article is about that we're reporting on, about taking vitamin D with calcium. However, there has to be a proper balance, which is why it's not good to just do this on your own without checking with your healthcare practitioner and getting vitamin D levels and calcium levels and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, you make a good point. These are substances that should be used in the right amounts. You talk about whether or not replacing with vitamin D in someone who has a low vitamin D makes a difference in the outcome of these diseases that you mentioned. And there are some studies that go, absolutely, yes, that is the case, but there's still a lot of controversy about it. And the Institute of Medicine, you know, which is at very powerful organization that looks at things, issues like this has come out and is not so positive as you or I are in our conversations here. But I don't agree with a lot of what they're saying. And in my research with other people who I think are the leading experts of vitamin D in the world, I feel like this is definitely something that we should bring back into the range of normal.
Well, this particular study showed that there was no increase in survival if you just took vitamin D alone.
Or you took calcium alone.
Yeah, because what can happen if you take too much calcium?
Well, that's a problem too. If your calcium is high in your intake and your vitamin D is low, then you're going to wind up putting a lot of that calcium into the soft tissues, and that's what causes arteriosclerosis. So you're going to increase your risk for heart attacks and strokes. And if you look at it the other way around and you've got a high vitamin D level without enough calcium, that can actually cause increased osteoporosis, which is kind of surprising, and also leads to an increased uptake in toxic metals, particularly if magnesium and phosphate are also low. So it gets complicated.
Another thing that I thought was interesting is whether you take vitamin D with calcium or vitamin D alone or calcium alone, all those reduce the incidence of breast and colon cancer.
Yeah, so there's a lot to know.
This is why it's not good to just mess around with it on your own by just reading an article that says that it'll do this or that.
Right. So if you want to do the best you can do about maintaining normal levels of vitamin D, get some sunlight. Because you see, our culture has shifted from one that lived outside to one that now lives inside. And when we live inside like this, like we're doing, we don't get those UVB rays that are present between 10 and 2, mostly in the spring, summer, and fall, but not in the winter. If you don't get those UVB rays, you can't make it.
And even in the summertime, because a lot of people are overdoing covering up, you know what I mean? Because they're putting sunscreens and hats and clothes and everything to protect themselves. And if you listen to your dermatologist and some of the other doctors, they'll say, don't get out in the sun in the middle of the day. Well,
right.
That's the best time to get your vitamin D,
like
is between 10
right.
and 2.
That's nice.
But you only need about 20 minutes unless you're dark-skinned.
Yeah, and if you're dark-skinned, you may need 45 minutes. And keep in mind that if you're getting your sunlight at a swimming pool and it's got chlorinated water in it, that chlorine is going to wipe out the vitamin D that your skin makes, because it just washes it right off the skin and into the water. So there are lots of ways to go wrong, and it's one of the reasons why measuring the level of vitamin D is a really smart thing to do. That should be a routine thing that doctors do every year or two.
The other thing is about sunscreens. You know, if you want to learn more about sunscreens, it's really another whole topic. You can go to drsaputo.com and put it in the search box, because I talk quite a bit about it there, because it's better not to use commercial sunscreens. You need to be careful about what kind of sunscreens you use, because they can actually, some of them can actually cause skin cancer. And they're loaded with chemicals, so you need to learn more about that. Maybe we could do that another time.
Well, you know, our doctors need to learn more about that too, because you look at the dermatologists, and what do? They're interested in the skin. They're interested in wrinkles and skin cancer. They're not so interested in diabetes and heart disease and cancer and osteoporosis. It's not like they're totally ignorant about it, but they don't focus on it. I mean, find me a dermatologist who's going to tell you, oh, don't worry about it, don't wear sunscreen, or make sure you get enough sunlight between 10 and 2. It just doesn't happen very often. So it's almost like tunnel vision.
And you don't need an SPF over 50. It's just a waste of money.
15% SPF is sufficient to do the job that you need. And keep in mind that maybe if you're going to use a sunscreen, use it on your face or other areas of the body where you're concerned that there may be some sun damage that could be occurring, or maybe where you're at a higher risk for cancer. But when you're out in the sun, you need total body exposure for 10 or 15 minutes at least to be able to make enough vitamin D. And then if you're in the sun a good part of the day, you may make 20 or 30,000 IUs of vitamin D a day. And the question you have to ask yourself is that the same thing as taking a supplement? And my answer to that is, I don't think so, but I can't prove it. I have this feeling that if we do things that are natural...
Nature seems to know best, doesn't it?
Nature definitely knows best and can guide us about what to do. So I like the idea of staying natural, and we're always talking about lifestyle medicine, There is no medicine that works anywhere near as well as a healthy lifestyle. And that's all within your own power. You can do that at your own discretion if you choose to. You don't have to wait.
And plus, common sense tells you not to get burned either.
Well, from that point of view, that's right. But you can take care of yourself in so many other ways. I mean, sleep and stress and exercise, what you weigh, exposure to environmental pollutants and having a meaningful purpose in your life. All these things are the real things that are the guts of wellness. And that's what we should be focusing on as our primary thing.
If you have any questions about your health or you'd like to join in our conversation, the number here at ProgressiveRadioNetwork.fm is 888-874-4888. That's 874-4888. It's old news that constant irritation can lead to cancer, but a new MIT study shows that the biggest risk factors for liver, colon, or stomach cancer is chronic inflammation of those organs, which is a constant irritation, and 16% of cancer is caused by viral or bacterial infections which cause the inflammation. So let's talk about the bacteria that can cause inflammatory bowel disease and colon cancer and how it does that.
Well, it's really pretty interesting that certain microbes are associated with an increased incidence of cancer. You take people who have viral hepatitis, either hep C or hep B particularly, and over time, they're at risk for developing hepatic cancers, liver cancers. And it may be related to one of the microbes. It's related to Helicobacter pylori. You know, we're always talking about H. pylori and what it does in people who have it in their stomach and they have gastritis or symptoms of it. They're at a higher risk for getting stomach cancer. Well, the same thing with Helicobacter hepaticus apparently is something that can increase your risk for inflammatory bowel disease and colon cancer in some people because it damages DNA and it turns on cancer genes. So it's very fascinating that infection over the long haul is fairly clearly shown to increase the risk for cancer. So one of the ways that this happens is that when an infection gets into our body, what our body does is it makes macrophages and polymorphonuclear leukocytes, which are your white blood cells. These are two cells that will destroy microbes because they engulf them, and then they make these very powerful chemicals that are like hypochlorous acid, which is like bleach, and they kill these microbes, these viruses, and these bacteria almost instantly. But if you have a chronic infection, meaning one over a long time, and your body's making this hypochlorous acid, it leaks out into the tissues and it can get to DNA. And when it gets to DNA over a long period of time, what happens is you wind up with a big increase in risk for cancer.
When you think about this, isn't this beautiful how nature takes care of things? You know, like you've got this infection and so these chemicals and things go there to kill it, to take care of it. But if something's not done to get at the cause and to stop it from happening, then it's going to cause this problem where it leaks into the tissues like this.
Right.
And this is what I guess can lead to cancer.
Well, it can. I mean, the chronic inflammation is what these people from MIT really were looking at when they studied this. They've been looking at it for about 30 years. And this is the conclusion they came to. So
when it damages the DNA, then it turns on the cancer genes?
Well, if the DNA is damaged, then you're talking about cancer changes in the genes that are caused by DNA damage that lead to the problem that we have. So we're really looking at something that is not news to us. I think we've had the idea for a long time. I know when I was in medical school 100 years ago or so, that was a theory they had at that time, that chronic inflammation could lead to all kinds of problems like this, and that's actually what we're looking at. So infection can lead to cancer. This is one of the mechanisms that does it. They actually did this study on mice that they infected with this bacteria, and they followed them over time, and they studied the DNA changes and found that there was this increased incidence of cancer. So that's the story on that. The lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Sbuta here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. 888-344-8888. We'll be back taking your calls after Vicki's first 2020 tip.
Well, since laughter is the best medicine, I have a healthy tip here for you. After a very busy day, a commuter settled down in her seat and closed her eyes as the train departed Montreal for Hudson. And as the train rolled out of the station, the guy sitting next to her pulls out his cell phone and he starts talking in a loud voice. I mean, isn't that annoying? We've all had this happen.
I know, it really is. It's terrible.
Hi, sweetheart. It's Eric. I'm on the train.
Right. Does everybody hear me? I want you to know I have a sweetheart.
Yes, I know. It's the 6:30 and not the 4:30, but I had a long meeting. No, honey, not with that floozy from the accounts office.
Oh,
with the boss.
Oh, my God.
No, sweetheart, you're the only one in my life. Yes, I'm sure, cross my heart. And he goes on and on and on. Well, 15 minutes later, he's still talking loudly. And when the young woman sitting next to him, who was obviously angered by his continuous diatribe, yells at the top of her voice, "Hey, Eric, turn that stupid phone off and come back to bed."
Oh, jeez. Oh, my gosh.
Well, Eric doesn't use his cell phone in public anymore.
Oh, touche, huh? Oh, that's great, Vicki. You know, humor is such a powerful way to treat a lot of illnesses that we have. It's amazing how the body responds to humor with its endorphins and its biochemistry. It just shifts, and it causes a symphony of changes that's very positive in terms of healing. You know,
Norman Cousins, he found that out,
didn't
he?
He wrote a whole book, yeah, The Anatomy of an Illness, and cured himself just with laughter, too. And it's something that we don't really use so much. You know, we're so focused in healthcare today about using drugs and technologies and surgeries to do things that we forget about the natural healing of the body. And it was, I don't know who it was that said it. I think it was Albert Schweitzer, the famous doctor, who said that we doctors basically stand around supporting the body the best we can while nature does the healing. And it's really true. It's the body that does the healing. And what we're finding is we do a lot of things to the body that may support it to some extent, but we don't do the healing because we haven't got the first really clue of how this healing mechanism works. So it's great to have a little bit of laughter. Thanks for that good tip.
Yeah, I was reading an article on longevity, and one of the things that it said was to giggle and laugh every day.
Oh, indeed. I mean, the way what you think has such a powerful effect on your biochemistry and physiology.
And hang out with people that have a good sense of humor that aren't just pulling you down all the time. And if you live with somebody that's like that or you're around people that are like that all the time, you better find some other friends to hang out with.
Well, it's a lot more fun, too. I mean, who wants to be down the dumps all day long because you're with somebody who you're letting take you down? And you have to remember that you're in charge of what you decide
to
do.
Yeah, but sometimes you kind of have to if you're living with somebody that's sick or has chronic depression or something like that. At least take care of yourself and go out once in a while and hang out with somebody that makes you laugh or watch a funny movie or do something.
Okay, the lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Lynn Sabuda here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. We have a call from Lucy from New Jersey. Hi, Lucy.
Hi.
How you doing?
All right. How are you?
Good. What's up today?
So I found this tick on me last Wednesday, and
mm-hmm.
It was a small tick. I looked it up on the internet,
mm-hmm.
and it appears it could be a deer tick, so I was wondering what's the best steps I should take.
Well, you know, this is so hard to do and to know what's right. If you're really worried about it and you're frightened of it and you haven't gotten sick, and it's been how long did you say?
Just a week. Not even a week.
Just a week. And you haven't got a bullseye rash there. I don't know if you know.
Yet.
No, not
I have,
yet.
I have a red raised area, but
how big is it?
Within a week.
The size of a dime or something like that?
Yeah, it's narrow.
Okay. Well, you can't tell from that, and if you're not sick, okay, from the bite itself, what you could have done is recovered the tick and taken it to the public health department. They will analyze it for Lyme disease, which is what your big concern is.
I still have it, actually, so.
Well,
I didn't know they do that, so.
They do, so you could do that to find out for sure. You know, you're in a tick area. That whole northeast there is loaded with ticks that are deer ticks that have Lyme disease. And it's frightening, but if the community doesn't have a lot of Lyme disease happening, you know, if you're somebody who gets exposed to ticks all the time, like if you ride horses or you're taking hikes in the country, what do you do? I think you kind of pay your nickel and take your chances. I know we out here in the San Francisco Bay Area, which is where we live, often ride our horses, and when we do, we get ticks on us, and sometimes they're the little deer ticks, and sometimes they're a little bigger. And we don't do anything about it because we haven't come across a whole lot of people who have Lyme disease.
One of the things that I do to try to deter them, I don't know how often you're exposed to them, but one of the things that I do is I have some essential oils that I like to put around the edges of my scalp, you know, because I've noticed that since I've been doing that, it's made a difference. I haven't been getting them because normally I was getting them like almost every time I'd go riding, I'd pick a tick off, you know, and usually they're right around my hairline. So since I've been putting these essential oils,
which ones are they?
One of them's called Purification, and one of them's called Idaho Pansy. And the other thing I did was I made a mixture of that with water and shook it up in a spritzer, and we were spraying the horses with it yesterday, and the flies don't like it either.
Right.
And another thing, I don't know if the people that have horses that get ticks, I've really learned that the worm medicine, because you have to give horses dewormers, and it really gets rid of the ticks, so it kind of cuts down on that problem.
I'll tell you what we'll do, Vicki. We'll post on drsabuda.com a little thing on what your remedy is to make with the essential oils. So if you go there, Lucy, after, say, give us 24 hours to get it up, we'll post it so that you can read what her little concoction is and maybe try that.
Okay.
The whole thing with Lyme disease is very, very challenging. There are a lot of very good doctors who think Lyme disease is a huge epidemic in the world, you know, in tick areas, especially where you live, and here too. And there are others who think that it's baloney. A lot of people carry the spirochete, but so what? It doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
And I have to tell you, I'm baffled by it. And I know that when I talk to the Lyme doctors about this, I find that there's a lot of controversy, and I'm not quite sure what to do. So you've asked a really tough question, and I hope that maybe the best thing that you can do is if you're really worried, you know, take the tick to the public health department and see if they can still analyze it.
Yep.
And maybe try Vicki's little concoction of essential oils.
Yeah, because before I started doing that, sometimes even the next day after I'd taken a shower, I'd still find one crawling in my hair or in my towel or something.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah, right.
I just was wondering if there's any natural supplements that might fight the bacteria if it does exist inside me right now.
Well, it's a spirochete, and I'm not sure that there's anything in complementary alternative
medicine.
You
just want to make sure you got the head out.
Yeah, that too. Well, that's about as much as I can help you with, Lucy. I hope that helps you some.
All right, thank you.
Thanks for calling.
Hey.
The lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. The number is 888-874-4888. We have a call from Ed from L.A. Hi, Ed.
Hi, doctors. Thank you for doing what you do.
Well, you're welcome.
I have a question. My wife had an upper respiratory infection 2 months ago, and it was so bad that she had to go into the hospital, and they gave her steroids.
Wow.
About 6 days, and then when she came home, they gave her prednisone. Now, her stomach has not been right since.
What a surprise.
She's been burping and having acid reflex problems.
Mm-hmm.
And then they gave her stuff like Pepcid, which didn't work, and Protonix, which also didn't work.
Yeah.
So I wanted to know if you had some natural remedy suggestions for her that might eliminate the acid reflex.
I sure do. There's a lot that you can do, and the first thing I would do is take a probiotic.
Okay, I have been giving her those.
Okay, I would add to that some L-glutamine, which is an amino acid that you can get in powder form. And usually what I prescribe for my patients, and keep in mind, Ed, that I can't prescribe for you over the air. Cause
I understand that.
Okay, so as long as that's clear.
Yes.
And the L-glutamine, I give them about a teaspoon of it twice a day.
Okay.
And then you can add something called mastic gum, which is something that will help fight the H. pylori microbe that may be down there that's causing some of this.
It's called mastic gum?
Mastic gum, yeah, M-A-S-T-I-C gum. And that
but you
may...
don't chew it.
No, it's not. It's a pill that you take, right?
Okay.
And that may help, too. Getting off the steroids is a really important thing to do.
Well, how is her respiratory infection?
She did get off the steroids. That was probably about 6 weeks ago, but her stomach, like I say, hasn't been right since. The only two things that I guess I have been giving her is aloe vera juice and probiotics.
That's good. You could also add DGL, which is licorice root extract.
Okay.
And it has the glycyrrhizin taken out of it because it causes hypertension.
Okay.
So it's called DGL. Any health food store has it, and I usually give my patients two tablets of that to chew up about 15 minutes before meals and at bedtime. So it's 8 tablets a day. It's safe and it's inexpensive. And you may want to go to drsavuta.com.
Okay.
And you can take the health assessment, which is about a by the way, the site is free. You can take the health assessment on peptic ulcers, which is probably what she has.
Which I think so, too. I agree with that.
And it will lead you to these products on our site if you want to purchase them there.
Okay.
So this is a free site that will give you lots of information. The particular problem that she has, it takes about 3 minutes to do the health assessment. And then it'll guide you to how to do diet, nutrition, and supplements to manage it.
That sounds wonderful. Thank you so much for all of your help. I really appreciate it.
Ed, thanks for calling. You have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. The lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health, and Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888, and we'll be back taking your calls after a short commercial break. I'm Dr. Len Saputo with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888 if you have a question about your health or if you want to join in our conversation. And we have a call from Lee from New York City. Hi, Lee. How are you doing?
I'm excellent, and thank both of you for the service that you're rendering. The question that I have relates to glaucoma.
Okay.
What are some holistic approaches to dealing with the condition?
Okay. There's not a lot that I am familiar with about that, but I do know that there are some key ingredients that a lot of people use that they think might be of some value. Some people are saying vitamin C to support healthy intraocular pressure. Some alpha-lipoic acid sometimes can support from the point of view of antioxidant protection to reduce inflammation. L-arginine is an amino acid that increases the circulation and may promote the health of blood vessels. Some people are using zinc to support the body from free radical damage. They're using bilberry and ginkgo and green tea extract and grapeseed extract. These are all things that are possible that you can try for eye health.
Okay.
So that's, I don't know what else I can tell you. There's nothing magic about that. The medications should be used, I think, when the pressure gets high enough or there's a risk of losing your vision. But yeah. In the absence of that, I would think about trying some of these things. And you can do just a Google search on glaucoma and maybe treatment with supplements. And these kinds of things will come up.
Okay, beautiful. Thank you very much.
Thanks for calling. Have a good day. The lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888.
This is a perfect time of year to be eating fresh stone fruits while they're in season. And new studies are showing that peaches and plums and nectarines help us to resist metabolic syndrome and inflammation and protect us against obesity-related diabetes and cardiovascular disease. Isn't this fun to have a delicious, something that tastes good, like these great stone fruits, get stoned on a stone fruit, that are actually anti-inflammatory.
Well, that's right. And the fruits you're talking about, I mean, they're really abundant now. In fact, we did a little fast-track video on drsaputo.com on this topic that's posted on the site now. And we have a nice bowl of fruit there, and it was just fun to do the thing.
Yeah, we probably ate too much of it.
we probably did. So you can listen to that video if you want. Just go to drsaputo.com.
So tell us about the compounds in the fruit and how they work.
Well, there are a lot of phenolic compounds. There are anthocyanins and chlorogenic acids and quercetin and catechins that are all beautiful antioxidants that reduce inflammation and tend to promote health. They affect fat cells and vascular endothelial cells and immune cells, and they help to prevent obesity and inflammation and diabetes and heart disease. And I have to say that while I know it does these things, and I don't know how much it does, the study that published this was from the people who produce these fruits, so you have to take that with a little bit of a grain of salt. But I think it's still something that we should, it's a natural food. And anytime we've got natural foods that are not adulterated, that are fresh and organic, that's what you want to do.
Well, I mean, you can always overdo anything, like the fructose, for example.
Yeah.
But it's balanced if you eat the whole fruit, because the fiber balances out the fructose. And
well,
fiber is a very healthy thing.
Well, it slows down the absorption of fructose. And, nature's pretty smart. These phenols and antioxidants and other smart chemicals do a lot to protect us against the development of the diabetes and the obesity epidemic. And, most of us, when we think of fructose, we think of high fructose corn syrup, which you certainly don't want to do because of all the negative health effects it has from the point of view of arteriosclerotic development. Anyway, the lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. And we'll be back taking your calls after Vicki's last 2020 tip.
I have a story for you that's called The Seed, and it's something definitely to think about because, we're all connected, body, mind, emotion, spirit. Well, there was a successful businessman. He's growing old, and he knew it was time to choose a successor to take over his business. And so instead of choosing one of his directors or his children, he decided to do something a little different. So he called all the young executives in his company together, and he said, "It's time for me to step down and choose the next CEO, and I've decided to choose one of you." Well, the young executives were shocked, but the boss went on and said, "I'm going to give each one of you a seed today, one very special seed. And I want you to plant the seed and water it and come back here 1 year from today with what you have grown from the seed that I've given you. And then I will judge the plants that you bring, and the one I choose will be the next CEO." Well, there's one man named Jim, and he was there that day, and he, like the others, received the seed, and he went home, and he was very excited, and he told his wife the story. And so she helped him get a pot and the soil and the compost, and he planted the seed. And every day he'd water it and watch it to see if it had grown. And after about 3 weeks, some of the other executives began to talk about their seeds and the plants that were beginning to grow. But Jim kept checking his seed, and nothing ever grew. And 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 5 weeks went by, still nothing. Well, by now, the others were talking about their plants, but Jim didn't have a plant, and he felt like a failure. Well, 6 months went by, still nothing in Jim's pot, and he just knew he'd killed his seed. And everyone else had trees and tall plants, but he had nothing. And he didn't say anything to his colleagues, but he just kept watering and fertilizing the soil, and he so much wanted this seed to grow. Well, a year finally went by, and all the young executives of the company brought their plants to the CEO for inspection. Well, Jim told his wife that he wasn't going to take an empty pot, but she asked him to be honest about what had happened. Well, he felt sick to his stomach, and it was going to be the most embarrassing moment of his life, but he knew his wife was right. So he took the empty pot to the boardroom. Well, when he were, when he arrived, he was amazed at the variety of the plants grown by the other executives. I mean, they were beautiful in all shapes and sizes. And Jim put his empty pot on the floor, and many of his colleagues laughed, and a few felt sorry for him. Well, when the CEO arrived, he surveyed the room, and he greeted his young executives, and Jim just tried to hide in the back. "My, what great plants and trees and flowers you've grown," said the CEO. "Today, one of you will be appointed the next CEO." And then all of a sudden, the CEO spotted Jim at the back of the room with his empty pot. He ordered the financial director to bring him to the front. Well, Jim was terrified. He thought, "The CEO knows that I'm a failure. Maybe he will have me fired." And when Jim got to the front, the CEO asked him what had happened to his seed. So Jim just told him the story, and the CEO asked everyone to sit down, except Jim. He looked at Jim and then announced to the young executives, "This is your next chief executive officer. His name is Jim." Well, Jim couldn't believe it. He couldn't even grow his seed. I mean, how could he be the new CEO, the others said. Then the CEO said, "One year ago today, I gave everyone in this room a seed. I told you to take the seed, plant it, water it, and bring it back to me today. But I gave you all boiled seeds. They were dead. It was not possible for them to grow.
Oh, my goodness.
All of you, except Jim, have brought me trees and plants and flowers."
Oh, that's too funny.
"When you found that the seed wouldn't grow, you substituted another seed for the one I gave you. Jim was the only one with the courage and honesty to bring me a pot with my seed in it. Therefore, he is the one who will be the new chief executive officer."
Oh, my goodness, what a great story.
So the moral of this story is to be careful what you plant now, because it'll determine what you're going to reap later.
That's true.
So I told this story for people to learn peace of mind and to have a little healthy food for thought.
Yeah, to be authentic, huh?
Yeah, to be authentic.
That's a great story.
Because it's all related to our health, you know?
Okay. The lines are open. You're listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Sabut here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888, and we have a call from Richard from Seaford. Hi, Richard.
Hi, how are you?
Fine. What's up?
A couple weeks ago on your show, you were talking about the functions of the appendix.
Uh-huh, indeed.
And if someone has had their appendix removed, what precautions should they be taking, or what supplements or whatever should they be doing?
That's a really good question. You know, nobody has written about that, but our common sense tells us that if the appendix is a reserve for the probiotics, which it is, then why maybe we should be taking some probiotics? I mean, its great function is to be a reservoir where you have these microbes that are being produced that are colonizing the colon. And when you take the appendix out, of course, as you're pointing out, that's gone. And when we have infections that are in the colon or in the intestinal tract, what happens is that stuff all washes the good bacteria out, and there's an overgrowth of all these bad bacteria like cholera and dysentery from a lot of different causes, and it can't get into the appendix because it's a blind sac. So the infection is not going to get into it, and because it's continuing to make a biofilm, which is a protective secretion that it has, and all these microbes, it will go on ahead and repopulate the colon with the right bugs and hopefully bring you back to good health. So I'm explaining all this for other listeners, Richard, that might not understand this. I think a probiotic is a great solution for that, and I think they're good anyway, because what happens is we, our microflora in the gut are very susceptible to what we put in our bodies, what we eat, what we're exposed to, the toxins and the good things. And it has to adapt in a way that its composition is just right so that it's balanced with the external world and the internal world. So I like your question, and I think your answer is a good one, that probiotics are the right solution, and I'd suggest that you stay on those, you know, maybe a couple times a week for the rest of your life. And all these poor people who have had what we call incidental appendectomies, which means that when the doctor is in the belly, the surgeon's in the belly for some reason, taking out your gallbladder or fixing something else, that they were taking out the appendix because it was convenient, and then they would never have a problem with appendicitis again, didn't get it. that there was a real function here. So I hope that answers your question, Richard.
Yes, thank you.
Thanks for calling. The lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Sabuti here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888.
This gives me kind of a good lead-in for several other articles that came up again this week. You know, the last few weeks, we've been talking a lot about the bacteria in our intestinal tract. Mm-hmm. And this week, it comes up about some of this friendly bacteria, the probiotic, that how it can reduce inflammation, and it's associated abdominal pain, and it works like, you know, an anti-inflammatory, and it actually enhances natural relaxants in the body. There was another one that talked about harmful bacteria that can live in our bodies and coexist, you know, without causing disease. There was another one about the microbiomes and chronic sinus conditions. And antiviral activity. So these bacteria, we're always trying to interfere with them. You know, we're always trying to, like, use antibacterial soaps and all these different things to get rid of the microbes. And some of them are pretty healthy. So let's start out.
Well, the vast majority of them are absolutely necessary. And in our ignorance, we've assumed that by destroying them and trying to look for, quote, cleanliness, that we've wiped out these protectors of our body that hang out in our skin and our eye and our ears and our gut.
Nose.
Every orifice in our body is full of them. Even our blood, you know, doctors don't like to think that our blood has microbes in it, but I'll tell you what, they do.
When you look at a live blood cell analysis.
A live blood cell analysis, you could see them there, and it's not like they're in large amounts. And the trick, of course, is for the body to be able to regulate which ones can be in which place. And that has to do with your overall level of wellness. So when your immune system is strong and you live a healthy lifestyle and you haven't had a lot of toxic exposures or abused yourself with lack of sleep or no exercise or too much stress or all the thing or bad food, all those things that can affect your overall wellness, when you don't respect those things, then is when microbes tend to overgrow and cause problems. And what we're looking at really is how many microbes of different, of the 10,000 or so that live in our intestinal tract.
Much more than the cells in the in our body.
Well, there are 10 times as many microbes as cells. I mean, there's lots of microbes. But what I'm trying to say is that the balance that's there makes a huge difference in what our health is like and how we can protect ourselves. And when we get large numbers of microbes in there, that in the wrong place, what happens is they tend to make more of the products that they make that maybe in small amounts wouldn't affect us, but in larger amounts become toxic. So, for example, if the Shigella or Salmonella microbe is in very small amounts and is making a little bit of toxin, you don't even notice it because it's too small to affect you. But if they overgrow for some reason because you've been on an antibiotic that has killed the other microbes or your immune system is weak, when they overgrow, we have real problems with the effects of that, of the toxins that it makes.
This reminds me of the discussion between Beauchamp and Pasteur.
Exactly right. You know, Pasteur discovers the microbe, and he says that's the thing that kills us. And from one point of view, he's exactly right. And Beauchamp is saying, hey, but let's look a little deeper. It may be that this organism is growing because it's allowed to grow because your immune system can't defend against it. So Pasteur says, kill the microbe. And Beauchamp says, strengthen the immunity of our body. And, of course, they're both important because if you have a huge dose of some microbe that's bad for you, it's going to make you sick. But if you have a weak immune system and only a little bit of a microbe, you're going to be vulnerable to that as well. So the kinds of microbes that live in us are really important, and they have a tremendous effect on our bodies and our overall health. It's just, as you know, this stuff that we thought was just a waste product, the stool in our intestines, is our friend. And if we don't have that stool there with all those microbes, we can't digest food, we can't make certain vitamins, we can't make other nutrients that we need, and basically, we'll be very sickly. when kids are given antibiotics at a young age, they're the ones who are particularly exposed or at risk for asthma and hay fever and allergic conditions. The kids that are not allowed to play in the mud or the dirt or and be exposed to these things are the ones also that are in that situation. So the kinds of microbes that live there are absolutely vital.
And also these probiotics actually fight off a lot of these dangerous pathogens. That's why it's so important to have this balance.
Well, they crowd them out, for one thing. You take an antibiotic and you knock out the intestinal flora for the most part. You've got a whole culture medium down there just waiting to be inhabited. And what's going to grow? It's going to be those microbes that are resisting the effect of the antibiotic that you took. And that's not what you want, because now maybe you'll get yeast overgrowth, or you'll kill off so many microbes that you'll be at risk for developing this so-called C. difficile enterocolitis, which so many people in the hospital are at risk for developing and often die from. So those are settings when we have to look at the composition of the microbes in the gut and support that balance, realizing that everybody's just a little bit different. It really depends on what you've been exposed to and how your body reacts to it, and then it adapts, and it causes a balance between the internal milieu, the inside of the body, and the outer world on the outside. So it's a very, very complicated and very important organ system in the body.
Yeah, it really is pretty interesting. We're always trying to do all these studies to try to outfox nature, you know, and you really can't do it. I thought it was interesting to know that these microbial communities are so different over all of our body. Like, even the microbes in our teeth are different from those in our saliva?
Yeah, absolutely. It's shocking at how our body is so unique and how our relationship with our environment is so important. And we've just ignored it. I know when I was in medical school, if anybody got a cold, they said, "Here, we'll just take the Saccharomyces." You know, in those days, the tetracycline was everybody was taking, because they thought, "Well, it can't hurt you." But we make assumptions sometimes that are interesting because we don't really have the background or the knowledge that's deep enough to be able to make the statements we make. And just because we don't know about something doesn't mean it doesn't exist. I mean, there are more than 10,000 microbial species that inhabit the human ecosystem in the gut. And we know that the genes, okay, that influence metabolism are mostly in the microbes in the gut, not in the human genome. You know, we've got 22,000 genes that encode proteins in our body. Well, the microflora in the gut have 8 million. And that combination determines a lot of what our health is going to be like. So we're looking at something that's really powerful and important. And so when we start doing things to people with our medications and our technologies and our surgeries, we're upsetting that natural balance that we have to have if we want to be healthy. And we're too dumb to know it a lot of the time.
You know, too many people, when they have sinus infections, they take antibiotics.
Uh-huh.
And there was another interesting study that showed that people that were given antibiotic before they were given the germ that caused the sinus infection, actually the antibiotic lowered their resistance.
Yeah, it makes it worse. You know, about 97% of the colds and sinus infections that we get are caused by viruses. They are not caused by bacteria. And yet, if there's dark mucus or somebody's particularly sick or there, you know, there's some blood in it, doctors are quick to prescribe antibiotics. And we know, because the Institute of Medicine tells us, that we way overdo that. We have to take note of it. Because,
and so many people, too, that have viral infections, any kind of viral infection,
yeah,
whether it's sinus or whatever it is, they want to take an antibiotic. They think it's going to help them. And they did this other study that shows that it lowers your immunity to the virus.
So it makes you have the infection that you might not get if you took that antibiotic. So patients come to me all the time and they say, "You know, I'm taking a trip, I got a little cold, please give me an antibiotic." And I'm going, "Well, I can give you an antibiotic, but it's going to make the risk of your health worse. It's not going to help it." And so we need to start paying attention to what we're doing in medicine and not make wild assumptions that just because we don't understand the details of what's going on, like when we're talking about the ecosystem of the gut, it's something that's it's really dangerous for us to continue to do.
I remember years ago, before we knew all this, we took a trip to Mexico and we thought we were going to protect ourselves by taking an antibiotic. We started taking the antibiotic before we even went.
Yeah.
And we
sure
got so sick. I mean, and then finally you went to the pharmacist there, and
the
pharmacist says, "Oh, you Americans think you know how to treat all these things, and you don't know anything about it."
Well, they were so right. Of course, I was a little arrogant, but then he got the last laugh because we were the ones that were sick.
But I thought that this article about the intestinal bacteria, the bifidobacter, and how that works by, you know, creating things like the GABA that helps with the inflammation and pain and has a calming effect. And it's just kind of like one thing leads to another that's helpful, and it explains how it can help with Crohn's disease and things like that.
It's pretty complicated. If you want more information about it, go to drsabuto.com. And put in probiotics or put in intestinal microflora.
Well, this week we talk about it on a fast track.
Right. You can. You know, we do a fast track on a lot of these shows that we do on our site at drsabuto.com. It is in video, and they're short, and you can get a lot of information from it, and they're kind of fun to listen to. You may, it may be 3 or 4 minutes, but it'll give you a good idea of what's going on. And you may want to take some of the health assessments that are there, because they're all free, and they give you a good idea of what you can do to understand and manage your illness. They're not intended to be treatment, because we can't do that, but we can give you ideas to discuss with your healthcare practitioner so you get more ideas about what you can do.
Well, because of some technical problems, we might not be able to have the fast track we did this week up this week.
There'll be fast
track.
It'll
be up later, and there will be, and there's plenty of other ones on this topic.
There are fast tracks that go up every single day. So you'll be able to go to drsabuto.com to the radio section and get them. Anyway, we're at the end of our show. We'd like to remind you that we'll be back live to talk about what's new in the news and health, and take your health questions every Monday afternoon on PRN.FM and drsabuto.com from 1 to 2 Eastern Time and 10 to 11 Pacific Time. Prescriptions are helpful.
Want to have more information on the topics we discussed? You just go to Dr. Saputo Radio and drsaputo.com and check out our Fast Track videos. And remember that lifestyle is the most powerful healer in the universe. So if you want to be well, pay attention to the style in which you live your life.
Have a great week. We'll be back next Monday.